blessing. Well, it's exciting for me, I think I got it, to see the growth and to see what God's doing here, because I was here 2 years ago. Were any of you here 2 years ago when I was here? You were, I remember that, yeah. and we drove by this building, and Brent was saying, that's our building in Jesus' name. And here we are. They're visionaries, aren't they? Well, I'm excited to be a part of this. It's an honor to be joined with you. There are some seats if y'all want to come up here. We got people standing. If you've never heard me before, I know what you're thinking. You know, I did an interview a while back. It was on TBN with, I think the segment was kind of about pastor's kids, you know, preacher's kids. And they had like John Hagee's son, Matthew, and Kenneth Copeland's grandson, and another preacher, his son, and me. And they asked each one of them, they said, you know, did you always know you were going to follow in your father's footsteps? Did you know you were going to preach? And Matthew Hagee said, yes, I've always known I'm called to preach. Kenneth Copeland's grandson said, yep, even when I was little, I said, when Papa sits down, I'm going to stand up. And the other guy, oh, yeah, I've had the call of God my whole life. And then they got to me, and I said, I just wanted to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. It's about as high as my dreams went, you know? So, anyway, I love to teach people how to dream. That's my passion, you know, teach you how to go the next level, to pursue the dreams that God's put in your heart. I was speaking in Westminster this weekend, and I told them, I said, me not talking about dreams, it's like Taylor Swift not singing about an ex-boyfriend. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen, right? So, but, you know, I think God has a sense of humor. A lot of times people tell me, you know, when I first heard you on the podcast, I thought you were 9 years old. But, you know, it's not how you sound that intimidates the devil, right? It's what's coming out of your mouth. So, but this was interesting. I was in Austin one time, and this lady was driving me to the church, and she said, I know why you sound like a kid. I said, please tell me. She said, because most of us stopped dreaming when we were kids, and you speak to the child in us to get our dreams back. I like that. There's a purpose for this, okay? But you know what? I do believe that you have to come to a place in your life where you realize that you've only got one life. And he's counting on you to fulfill an assignment. He's counting on you to do something that he called you to do. And you can't look around and wait for other people to come along and encourage you and tell you you've got the right dream, you're not crazy. You know, because you have to realize God hasn't necessarily told them what he's told you about your future. Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, you know, Dr. Daniel Amen, he has this 18-40-60 rule. He said when you're 18, you kind of worry what everybody thinks about you. When you're 40, you don't care what anybody thinks about you. When you're 60, you realize nobody's been thinking about you. You're too busy thinking about their own life, right? So you just have to get serious about the plan of God for your life, right? Well, I'm going to teach you a message today. I call it Drive, because I believe it's going to take a lot of drive for you to fulfill your assignment. You know, somebody once compared the game of football as 60,000 people who desperately need exercise, watching 22 men who desperately need rest. They said, but the game of football is highly indicative of life itself. Most people watch from the sidelines. Very few people get off the bleachers and get in the game, right? But see, I believe you are in the game, or you wouldn't have made yourself get up on a Sunday morning when you could be sleeping in. But I think it's going to take a lot of drive to stay in the game, right? So I'm going to teach you about that. In fact, I think it could be compared to what happens with a locomotive. Do you know the toughest part about a train is getting it started? You know, you think about that. A massive train can be prevented from moving 1 inch by putting little blocks of wood in front of the wheels. But once that train gets up to full speed, not even a steel reinforced wall, a concrete wall 5 feet thick can stop it. See, that's what happens in your life when you develop drive in your life. There's no force from hell that can stop you from fulfilling your dreams. You believe it?
Yes.
So I have a little acronym for you, for D-R-I-V-E. You ready? The D stands for a decision. Everything in life begins with a decision. And before we go on, I just have to say, y'all are amazing. Wasn't this worship team amazing?
Yes.
Y'all are so anointed, so good. So the first point is a decision. Everything begins with a decision. And what I mean by this is it's you making a decision to take 100% responsibility for your life. That's where you say, I am responsible for where I am today. I'm responsible for my debt, my wealth, my success, my achievements, my failures, my relationships, my weight. I'm responsible for where I am right now in my life. That's a big decision that you have to make. You know, Zig Ziglar, when he was just a young, aspiring motivational speaker, he went to a conference and he heard a motivator say this. He said, "You are where you are because that's exactly where you chose to be." He said, "I was broke, in debt, and down in the dumps." He said, "But it came through loud and clear that I was where I was and what I was because of me, because of my choices." And of course, he started making destiny decisions to turn his life around, right? Well, that's what we have to do. But you know, sometimes you have to have something to motivate you. In fact, Jim Rohn, he said that there's certain emotions that can lead us to a life change. One of those emotions is the word disgust. Now, normally we don't equate the word disgust with positive action, but do you know that being disgusted with yourself can actually serve as vision and momentum to get you to change? Now, you think about that. Seeing a photo of yourself overweight, that can be enough disgust for you to say, "I've had it. I'm making a decision." Or being at the grocery store and having to put your groceries back because maybe you can't afford all of them. That can be enough disgust that you say, "Enough is enough. I'm not living like this anymore." Or being at the restaurant with your friends and maybe your credit card's declined right in front of them. And you say, "That's it. I'm turning my life around. I'm making a decision." So disgust is what we reach when we're tired of being ashamed, embarrassed, humiliated with some aspect of our lives. And we say, "That's it. I'm making a decision." So like I said before, you have to come to that place where you make that decision that you're not going to be where you are today next year at this time, right? How many of you don't want to be where you're at today next year at this time? I don't either. But we have to make a decision to make progress, right? You know, I heard a story about this little boy named Monty Roberts. He was a very poor kid. His dad was a horse trainer. And he said he grew up on the back of a truck, you know, really just going from town to town. He said he was barely in the same school district from one year to the next. And he said he was sitting in class one day and the teacher said, "I want all of you to write a paper on what you want to be when you grow up." So he said he really thought about it. He put a lot of time and a lot of attention into this paper. And he said, "Well, I want to raise thoroughbred racehorses." He said, "I want to live in this big house. I want to have 200 acres. He said he even drew the horse track. He drew little bunk houses and tack rooms. He put so much effort into this paper. Well, he turned it into the teacher, you know, and then she graded everything. Well, the next day she passes out the papers, and this is what his said: "F, see me after class." So he said he took that paper home, and he was just devastated. He couldn't understand why this happened. First of all, he asked the teacher. He said, "Why did I get an F?" She said, "Listen, Monty, you're a poor kid. You live on the back of a truck. Do you even know what land cost in the valley? You say you're going to have 200 acres. Do you even know what it cost?" She said, "This is an unrealistic dream for a kid like you." She said, "My job as a teacher is to not let you grow up and be disappointed. Go ahead, rewrite the paper, and I'll give you a better grade." So he said he went home that day, and he was just devastated, and he shared it with his dad. He said, "Dad, what do I do?" His dad said, "Monty, I can't tell you what to do, but whatever you decide, it's going to affect the rest of your life." So he said he thought about it. He went back to class the next day, and he handed in that very same paper. And he said, "You know what? You keep the F. I'm keeping my dream." Nice. I love that, don't you? Kind of like a take this job and shove it, you know. Keep the F. So this is the cool thing. Monty Roberts, today, he has that very paper framed in his 4,000-square-foot home in the valley on 200 acres where he raises thoroughbred racehorses. In 1 year alone, his salary was $6 million. You keep the F. I'm keeping my dream. But you know what? He had to make a decision to not allow someone else to determine his destiny, right? And you have to do the same thing. So the D stands for a decision. And I'm believing today is going to be a defining moment for you, where you say, "I'm making a decision. The last day of July, I'm making a decision." The R stands for a routine. A routine. Have you ever heard that phrase that people are rewarded in public for what they practice in private? You know, that's really the truth. People are rewarded in public for what they practice in private. Have you ever heard that phrase that champions don't become champions in the ring? They're merely recognized there. It's what's going on behind the scenes that nobody sees that prepares them for that moment, right? You know, you think even in the Bible, you remember David, he killed a lion and he killed a bear in private with nobody watching. But But that prepared him to kill Goliath in public with everybody watching. Yeah. So what are you doing behind the scenes that's going to prepare you for success? Well, you know, one of the things that changed my life years ago, for years and years of my life was average. Every year was just a repeat of the year before. I hit this hard place in my life. My marriage was falling apart. I was falling apart. I had no dreams, no goals. I was a ghostwriter for my dad. Everything about my life was just average. Well, all of a sudden, I reached that point, like I'm telling you, where I made a decision. Something has to change. And I didn't have a success coach come to my house and lay out this growth track for me or anything. This was just one little plan that I had for my life, and this was it. Every morning, I'm going to make myself listen to a faith-building message every day for 21 days. That was it. Because, you know, I'd heard behavioral psychologists say that if you do something consistently for 21 days, you can break an old habit and start a new one, right? So I said, okay, 21 days. So I got a CD player. I got a little post-it, put it on the mirror. It said, push play. Went over to my parents' house, stole a bunch of their CDs, and I was ready. Well, and keep in mind, I had to think, when can I be consistent with this? I thought, well, I might as well do it in the morning while I'm getting ready because I got to get ready anyway. And it takes a long time to look like this. So I said, I might as well do it in the morning. So at first morning, I push play. I'm hearing the word. I did it the next day and the next day. Well, at the end of 21 days, I thought, I don't want to stop. I'm going to do a whole month. Well, at the end of a month, I thought, why not go to 2 months? And then 3 months. Well, that was in 2002, and I haven't stopped. I woke up in Highlands Ranch this morning, and I was listening to a message. I was in the gym at the hotel listening to Joel Osteen. But here's the thing. As I was listening to messages during that 21-day period, all of a sudden, I heard John Maxwell make this statement. He said, if I could come to your house and watch you for 24 hours, I could tell whether or not you're going to be a success or a failure. He said, you pick the day, but let me just observe you from a distance. Let me just watch what you're doing on a day-in, day-out basis. And by observing you in one full day, I could tell if you're going to get closer to your dreams or further from them. He said, you know, a lot of times when I say that at conferences, people get mad. They think it's an arrogant thing to say. He said, but the reason I say that is the secret of your future is hidden in your daily routine. The secret of your future is hidden in your daily routine. So you think about that. What are you doing on a daily basis that's going to cause you to grow, to go to the next level, to think bigger, to dream bigger, to develop habits that are going to lead you to success? So that was just a simple habit that I started, and I haven't quit. Well, you know, I like to study successful people like, you know, Michael Jordan. This is kind of like Mary Poppins up here. You don't know what's going to come out. You just wait. I've got a few more goodies. But, you know, you think about Michael Jordan. He's probably the greatest basketball player ever, right? Well, you know, Tony Robbins was interviewing him one time, and he said, Michael, what is it about you that sets you apart from everybody else? Is it just natural ability? Is it God-given talent? What is it? Michael Jordan said, it's my routine. He said, I expect more out of myself every day. He said, I'm not competing with other people. I'm competing with myself. Well, he had a routine that led him to his dreams. Well, you think about the legendary golfer, obviously, Tiger Woods. Well, I couldn't fit a golf club in here, okay? So, Tiger Woods, his vision is to be the best golfer that ever lived. Well, see, you can't have a vision without a routine that will lead you to it. Do you remember when Tiger Woods started lifting weights when golfers didn't even lift weights? Then he changed his golf swing. You don't change your golf swing when you're already doing pretty good. But he, you know, retrained himself, and then other golfers started modeling his routine. Well, if you've got a vision, if you've got a dream for your life, you have to have a routine behind the scenes to lead you to it. You know, we've got the Olympics coming up, and you love to watch all the training for the Olympics. You remember 2008 and 2012? Do you remember the Olympic swimmer, Michael Phelps? Well, just for the record, these do not belong to my husband. I would not marry a man that wore these. But anyway. Anyway. Just trying to make a point, okay? It's clear, right? Okay. But, you know, you think about Michael Phelps. You know, when you watch those swimmers, they have unbelievable workouts, don't they? Well, Michael Phelps did 2 and 3 of those workouts a day. People said, that's not humanly possible. But he had a vision and he had a routine to back it up. Well, what did he win? 7 gold medals? Think about that. What is the routine that you have that's going to lead you closer to your dreams? You know, someone gave me this article from Entrepreneur Magazine. I thought it was so interesting. It was on the habits of wealthy people versus the habits of poor people. Now, when I share this, I don't want to offend anybody because I'm not saying you're wealthy and I'm not saying you're poor when I tell you this. But they just had to draw the line somewhere and just see, do wealthy people practice certain things that's made them so successful? And if we were to adapt some of those habits, would it help us, right? So in the criteria, they said, we defined wealthy as someone earning at least $160,000 a year with $3.2 million in assets. They said we defined poor as someone earning under $30,000 a year with less than $5,000 in assets. So they said, let's just find out, do wealthy people do certain things that poor people don't do? So they said, how many wake up 3 or more hours before they go to work? 44% of the wealthy, 3% of the poor. They said, how many listen to audio teaching during their commute to work? 63% of the wealthy, 5% of the poor. How many read for 30 minutes or more every day? 88% of the wealthy, 2% of the poor. How many exercise 4 days a week? 76% of the wealthy, 23% of the poor. Then they said, how many watch reality TV? 7% of the poor. I mean, 78% of the poor and 7% of the wealthy. Think about that. How many believe good habits create opportunities? 84% of the wealthy, 4% of the poor. So wealthy people believe these habits are what are helping me become more successful. Poor people don't even believe it helps them, so they don't do them. I think we're catching on to something, aren't we? It's like Dave Ramsey says, if you want to be wealthy, study wealthy people. If you want to be successful, study successful people. Then he says, if you want to be skinny, study skinny people. But the point is, they have certain habits. So what would happen if we just said, you know what? I can do this. I could use my drive time to get ahead. Got to drive anyway. Well, they say the average American drives 20 minutes to work and 20 minutes back home every single day. After doing that for 5 years, that's 1,250 hours in your car, or the equivalent of a college education. Just push and play on your way to work, on your way home. On your way to work, on your way home. I'm convinced, I mean, at the end of 1 week of doing this, you would start thinking differently. You know, I have a friend who pastors a church in St. Louis, and he said, you know, I have spent time with John Maxwell, Bill Gates, T.D. Jakes, Joyce Meyer, Michael Jordan. He's telling us all this, and we all just had our mouths open, and we said, are you serious? He goes, but I've never met any of them. But he said, I spend time with them on my way to work, on my way home, on my way to work. So I want to challenge you to develop a routine. You know, if you do kind of what I did, where you say, for 21 days, I'm going to listen to a faith-building teaching. I mean, doesn't the Bible say faith comes by hearing? So every time you push play, your faith gets stronger. And when God gives you an impossible dream, like it's time to get out of debt, and you don't have a clue how you're going to get out of debt, well, you need faith, don't you? Well, how do you get more faith? The number one method God has given us is faith comes by hearing. So the more you hear the word, you're going to say, Lord, I don't know how I'm going to get out of debt, but I trust you. Somehow, some way, you're going to give me ideas that produce great wealth. So push play. And hey, if you start this habit, you've already done day one. Check it off. You can start with tomorrow, right? You ready for the I? So a decision, a routine, and then the I stands for an investment. It's going to take an investment. And what I mean by that is an investment in yourself, an investment in your growth. You know, I mentioned a man earlier named Jim Rohn. He was one of the greatest motivational speakers that ever lived. He's since gone on to heaven. He was a Christian, loved the Lord, you know. But he was one of the greatest. But when he was first learning about success, he was struggling. He said, I was working at Sears making $57 a week. He said, I had pennies in my pocket. I was full of excuses. I had nothing in the bank. And he met this very wealthy man who just kind of took him under his wing and just began to teach him. And this wealthy man said to him, he said, Jim, what you have at this moment in your life, you have attracted by the person you've become. He said, if you don't have much, perhaps you haven't become much. Well, that's a harsh thing to hear, isn't it? So it offended Jim. He was pretty hurt by that. He said he held up his paycheck to that wealthy man, and he said to him, he said, you don't understand. He said, this is all they pay. His mentor said, no, this is all they pay you. He said, they pay others more. This is what they pay you. Then he began to teach him. He said, you know, in fact, don't they pay others in your company five times that amount? Jim said, yes. He said, if you were to qualify for five times that amount, wouldn't your paycheck be five times that amount? He said, yes. Then he began to teach him this. He said, success is something you attract by the person you become. Success is something you attract by the person you become. He said, if you want more, just become more. Then he began to tell him things. Like he said, don't wish it was easier. Wish you were better. He said, don't wish for less problems. Wish for more skills. Think about that. Now listen to this phrase. If you really get this, I'm convinced it will change your life. He said this to him. He said, learn to work harder on yourself than you do on your job. He said, if you work hard on your job, you'll make a living. If you work hard on yourself, you can make a fortune. Do you want me to repeat that? He said, learn to work harder on yourself than you do on your job. If you work hard on your job, you'll make a living. If you work hard on yourself, you can make a fortune. Think about that. Doesn't the Bible say to whom much is given, much is required? Or, you know, you could say it this way. Much is required in order for much to be given. So what would happen if we just said, you know what? I'm going to start investing in myself so that I can grow. Because success is something you attract by the person you become. He also said things like, if you don't like the size of your money, increase the size of you. He said, your money will only grow to the extent that you grow. And you know, I really can say that that's exactly what's happened in my life. When I, you know, this is what happened was I graduated from college. I went to Texas Tech University. I have a degree in French and a minor in communications. Well, when I graduated from college, we're having the graduation party, you know, and I made this big announcement to the family. I said, I will never study again. Now, the sad thing is, that's probably the dumbest thing I've ever said in my life. Because I thought I've paid my dues, graduated with honors, I will never study again. Now, the sad thing is, I backed up my dumb promise for 11 years of my life. 11 years. Think about that. I was a ghostwriter for my dad. You know, I wrote probably 25, 26 books for him. Some of you know my favorite preacher, Jerry Savelle. I wrote, you know, all these books for him. I worked hard on my job. I would stay late if I had to. I'd work weekends if I needed to finish manuscripts, to write the magazine articles. I was fully invested in the company, but I worked hard on my job. But I would dance all the way to work for the radio. I'd dance all the way home. As soon as I got home, I'd turn on the TV, watch TV for hours, and then do it again the next day. At the same time, for 11 years, I'm working hard on my job. I lived paycheck to paycheck. I had nothing in savings, nothing in investments, paid my car note every month, paid my credit cards every month. Every single thing about my life was average. Everything. All of a sudden that morning in 2002, when I said, I'm going to make myself listen to one message every day for 21 days. You want to know what happened the next 11 years after doing this consistently? I went from ghostwriting books for my dad to authoring books. I went from attending conferences to speaking at conferences. I went from watching TV for hours to co-hosting a TV show. What happened? I went to work harder on myself than I did on my job, and everything began to grow. And because I began making that investment in myself, I became more valuable to my dad's organization. It was after a series of that all of a sudden he said, "You got a lot of wisdom," and he promoted me as the CEO of the company. All because I made an investment in myself. So what would happen if you said, this is a defining moment in my life, I'm not going to play around with this anymore. We're not going to repeat next year what we did this year, right? I'm believing you're going to make that investment. In fact, I remember I went online to Joyce Meyer's website, and I was buying all these products, and at the end of it, it said I spent $60. This was in 2002. And I remember going, I cannot believe I just spent $60 on faith-building resources. Then I thought, wait, I would easily spend that on some amazing shoes. But then I thought, this is my future we're talking about. Well, do you know today the most valuable things in my home is my library? I do have some amazing shoes, but those are not the most valuable things to me. They can be replaced. But those books and those audios and those kits that I've invested in, that's what's changed my life. So I want to challenge you, make an investment in yourself. You ready for the next one? The V stands for vision. Of course, that's my favorite topic. The Bible says that where there is no vision, the people perish, right? If you don't have a vision, you're just dying. That word perish means die. It means choke, croak, give up the ghost, cash in one's chips, and go bye-bye. So if you don't have a vision, that's what's happening. If you don't have a reason to get up in the morning, if there's nothing you're anticipating accomplishing by December 31st, you need to have a vision. Bible also says that you not only need to have a vision, but you got to take the time to write the vision. Texas size pen here. But you got to write the vision. Habakkuk 2:2 says, write the vision, make it plain, right? In fact, I think I recognize some LTD people. Yay! Do we have other LTD entrepreneurs here? I love it. You know, they've heard me teach at success conferences. It will be, 12,000, 14,000 people in the arena. And I will teach the exact same thing I'm teaching right now. You know, success comes from the Word of God, doesn't it?
That's right.
God's the one who said to have a vision. Habakkuk said, write the vision, make it plain on paper. Well, you know, when I teach at some of these conferences, I have to be real creative about what I say about the Bible. But you think about that. Every success principle comes from God's Word. Some of you have read the book. I know these entrepreneurs have read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. You know, in that book, Napoleon Hill was commissioned by Andrew Carnegie to go out and interview 500 millionaires back then to find out what are they doing that's making them so successful. Now, back then, it was people like Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, John D. Rockefeller, Charles Schwab, the wealthiest people in the world back then. And he said, I want you to interview 500 of them. Find out what they're doing that's making them so successful. So he came back after interviewing all of them. Took him 20 or 30 years to get this done. He said, they do. They all have something in common. He said, what is it? He said, every single one of those millionaires have clearly defined written goals. Clearly defined written goals. They're not just in their head. They write them down. Take the time to write the vision and make it plain. You know, I'm passionate about teaching people to have vision boards and vision books and to keep the vision before your eyes. Well, you know, years ago I was ministering in France, and while I was away, they were redecorating our offices. This is when I was still at my dad's ministry. They're redecorating the offices, you know, and they're painting my office and putting all these pictures up. And one of the girls texted me while I'm in Paris, and she said, Terry, what do you want on that giant wall that your desk faces? I texted her back and said, a vision board. She texted me back, huh? I said, I want a giant vision board because I want to put pictures and images of where I believe this ministry's headed. Well, I came home, you know, and saw how beautiful the offices were, and then there was this big giant vision board on the wall, you know. It was framed, and I was just so excited about that vision board. Well, I had to get caught up on stuff. You know, I'd been gone for a couple weeks. I'm getting caught up on work. But I can't tell you how bad it bothered me. Every time I would look up from my desk and see nothing. And I'm convinced if you see nothing, you can expect nothing. If you see nothing in your future, you can expect nothing in your future. Your life will be exactly where it is today if you see nothing. See, you have to see where you're headed before you start taking steps towards it. You've heard the principles that you'll never leave where you are until you see where you'd rather be, right? But you got to see it on the inside first. And the reason I like to tell people to make vision boards and vision books is because it causes that vision to come alive on the inside of you. When you start seeing pictures and images of where you're headed, it causes that dream to come alive. So I started putting pictures up there of me in bookstores, you know, with acting as if my books are on the shelf. I started putting pictures of different amounts of money I was looking for. I even put a picture of me and John Maxwell superimposed. It's totally fake, as if we're friends. I put a picture of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, and my husband said, you want to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader? I was like, Rodney, no. And he goes, well, sometimes they pick old ones. He's like, by the way, Rodney's not a motivational speaker, but I'm still working on him. I put pictures of all kinds of stuff up here. Well, do you know? In fact, let me see if I can show you this. Every single thing that I just shared with you has happened. I mean, everything from having the books in bookstores to here we are. This was last November on the 50-yard line preaching to the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. Here we are, the first time I spoke at an event with John Maxwell. I like that one because we're friends now, and I like to think that. No, you know, he says that to everybody. He walks up and says, "I'm John, I'm your friend." I said, "I'm Terry, you're my hero." But I'm telling you, everything I began to write began to happen. Everything from, I remember there was a certain department that we were bleeding for $100,000 in. So I put $100,000. Is it a coincidence at the end of that year it was $108,000? We had an event. I said, "I'm bleeding for 828 people to come to that event," because they said we can fit 828 chairs. We had 838 women. I'm telling you, everybody in my ministry, they all have vision boards. Is it a coincidence the dreams keep happening? I told a girl last year, you know, we have a women's event called Icing. And, well, let me just share with you how that vision came about. I said, you know, the Lord gave me this idea to start this women's conference called Icing. I was sitting in a meeting just like you are, and all of a sudden the word Icing came to me. And I was just like, "God, I'm so hungry." And then the Lord began to tell me, no, that's the name of the conference, you know. So I actually looked up the word icing. Well, do you know icing means something added to something good to make it even better? Cake's good, but the icing makes it better, right? So I like to teach people, it's one thing to have a dream for your life. When you discover God's plan for your life, that's the icing on the cake. So I was sharing with my team before we launched this event. I said, you know, I want you to know what I see on the inside in my spirit. I said, I don't see 20 women in a little conference room. I said, I see thousands of people in an arena. That's what I see on the inside. So I said to one of the guys that works with me, I said, I need a picture of me preaching to thousands of people. So he said, well, there's only one problem. You've never preached to thousands of people. I said, well, can you make one? So he did. He went to Joyce Meyer's conference and he printed out this picture. Well, he took little Joyce off the stage and he put little Terry on the stage. Then in the background, he took out Joyce Meyer and he put Icing with Terry Seville Foy Ministries. And then even on the big screens, I don't know if you can see it, on the big screen, I'm actually wearing Joyce's clothes. He just chopped her head off and put my head on. So he printed this out and we just laughed and thought this was the cutest thing, you know, little Joyce, little Terry. And I said, but yes, that's my vision, you know. Well, we printed several copies, and I met with my team, and I said, I want y'all to know where we're headed. This is what I see on the inside. Well, they all laughed and thought it was so cute, right? Well, here's the thing. There's a principle in the Word of God that you become what you behold. You become what you behold. In fact, do you remember when God told Abraham he was going to be the father of many nations? And he told him, he said, come outside. I want you to count the stars. And he said, I can't count all those. And he said, well, that's how many kids you're going to have. Then he brought him outside and he said, look at all the sand. Can you count it? Abraham said, no. He said, well, that's how many kids you're going to have. Well, think about that. Abraham lived in the desert. What's he surrounded by all day long? Sand. What's he surrounded by all night long? Stars. He was surrounded by vision and he became what he beheld. Well, this picture hangs on my vision board in my office. So think about that. Every day when I look up from my desk, I see vision. Well, the more you look at this, you stop laughing, right? I'm not just doubled over every time I see this picture. Well, then the more you look at it, you kind of forget it's a fake picture. Then the more you look at it, it actually looks kind of real. Well, you become what you behold. Here's a fake picture. Here's a real picture of me preaching to thousands. Whatever you keep before your eyes, it will eventually show up in your life. So what is the vision that God's given you? See, if it's a vision to get out of debt, I would go home tonight, add up that debt, get a picture of money, put it on your vision board, and start speaking to that vision. You need to know exactly what it is. It's like Creflo Dollar said, if Jesus himself showed up in your living room tonight and said, how much money do you need to get out of debt? If he said, if you can't answer him, you're not serious about getting out of debt. But if you said, Lord, I need $12,556.11, then you're serious about getting out of debt, right? If it's a desire you have to go back and get your degree or, you know, to adopt a baby, to get your realtor's license, to get your pilot's license, to whatever it is, write the vision and make it plain. You have to surround yourself with vision. You know, I had a friend who said he was visiting Will Smith's house. And, you know, Will Smith, the actor, you know, he's also a producer. Well, he said when he went over to his house, he noticed this big glass wall that had like 150 little index cards just all over the window, all over the glass. And he asked him, he said, "What is that?" He said, "Well, that's my next movie I'm working on." He said, "Well, what are all those cards?" He said, "Those are all my different scenes." He said, "Every good movie, you know, has good characters and bad characters and conflicts and victories and ups and downs." And he said, "So I just move the cards around how I want the movie to go." Well, the guy that was looking at this, he said, "This just looks so confusing. I mean, how do you even know where to start?" He said, "Oh, that's the easy part. You always start with the final scene and then you work towards it." Well, see, it's the same with your vision. You could say, "I'm going to pretend it's December 31st of this year." You still have 5 full months to do something. And you could just imagine it's December 31st. You look back to your friends and you say, "This has been the most amazing year of my life." What would need to happen for you to say that? Does it mean you paid off that student loan that you've been dragging for 10 years? Does it mean you lost 10 pounds? Does it mean you finished a semester? What does it mean for you to say, "This has been the most amazing 5 months of my life"? Or you could even go further and say the end of next year. Give yourself 17 months to say, "Let's pretend it's December 31st of that year. What needs to happen in my life?" Decide how you want it to end and then start taking steps towards it. We can do that, can't we? You know, I could go on and on. I have so many stories about vision boards, but I'm going to move on to the last point. You ready? So we said it takes a decision, a routine, an investment, a vision. And what else is it going to take to achieve your dreams? Everything you've got. Pretty much everything. You know, I never want to give an impression that I just come out here with cute shoes, make a vision board, and it's amazing. They just happen. It's crazy. No, I've had to fight for my dreams, and you will too. In fact, Ecclesiastes 5:3 says, "A dream comes about with much business and painful effort." You have to fight for your dreams. What did Thomas Edison say? "Most of life's failures are those who didn't realize how close they were to success when they gave up." My favorite preacher says this, Jerry Savelle. He says, and this is really good, you might want to write this down, because he says, "When you feel like giving up the most, that's always an indication your breakthrough is just about to happen." That's something to hold on to, because some of you might be in a challenge right now where you're going, "Dear God, I don't know how much longer I can stand." But when you feel like giving up the most, that's always an indication your breakthrough is just about to happen. You know, it's interesting. I love being here with this church and being here at this time, because it was exactly 2 years ago that I came to preach here, right? Wasn't it July 2014 or August? I can't remember, but it was during this time frame. And that was the season where I resigned my position as CEO for Jerry Savelle Ministries. I'd done that for 11 years. I loved serving my dad. That's not something I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to quit. It was the greatest joy of my life to be his CEO. Well, all of a sudden, the Lord spoke to me one day, and I was crying so hard because I knew the Lord was telling me it was time to launch out into my own ministry. And I heard the Lord say, "Fly, Terry, fly." I thought, that's got to be God, because I don't use bird terms. So I wrote that down, "Fly, Terry, fly." Well, the Lord told me, you know, he said, "You can fly high or you can fly low. The higher you go, it'll take you further from the nest." Well, I knew the nest was serving my dad, being comfortable in that place, you know. And so I said, "Lord, I know what you're saying," but I was crying so hard because I didn't want to leave. So I said, "Lord, please just give me like 57 confirmations, give or take a few. 57 would be nice." Well, I'm telling you, God gave me so many confirmations that were just wild, that just let me know you've heard from God. Leave this place of security and start from scratch. Well, we left everything. I mean, think about it. I'd been the CEO for 11 years, served my dad for 22 years. I was comfortable. I had a comfortable job. I had a nice salary, had a built-in production team, accounting department, customer service department, media department. We had all of that built in, right? I left everything to start from scratch. We had to buy pens, paper, computers, a chair, energy drinks. I mean, we had to buy everything from scratch. And so I told, you know, there were 5 people going with me. And I said, "Lord, I've never paid 6 salaries before. I've never paid rent before. I've never bought all this stuff." So I told my CEO, I said, "I'm going to reduce my salary significantly because I've never done this before and I don't know what we can afford yet." So I said, "I'm going to reduce my salary." Well, think about that. I'm stepping out in faith, doing what I know God told me to do. He brings me all these confirmations. I know I've heard from God. My dad's in agreement. He says it's the will of God. You're going to reach twice as many people with the same message. Well, wouldn't you think that because you're obeying God that he would just part the Red Sea and you just fulfill your dreams, right? Well, as soon as I said, I'm going to the other side, we were going to move about 75 miles away, I guess it is, something like that, towards Dallas, Texas, and open up offices. As soon as we said that, and I'm reducing my salary, my husband and I get this bill from the IRS, $27,500, out of nowhere. We already paid our taxes. This bill just came out of nowhere. At the same time, my husband, who's a businessman, he gets into a lawsuit with a very famous company that you would know if I said their name. And we have no idea. They're suing lots of people, and my husband's company was one of them. So we were just like, we don't know if it's going to be $100,000. We don't even know what they're going to sue for. At the same time, we're trying to sell our house so we can move an hour and a half away towards Dallas. Well, everybody on my team, they put their houses up for sale. Their houses sold instantly. They moved. Not me. My house wouldn't sell. For 7 months, my house would not sell, not one single offer. And I've got to get my daughter in the school district out there for her senior year. And I was just like, what do I do? The house won't sell. We can't drive 3 hours every day for her to go to school and me go to work. So I said, well, I guess we'll live in a hotel out there once school starts. So me and my daughter Cassidy moved in a hotel, and it wasn't the Four Seasons because we're paying the hotel every single night for 3 months. So think about that. My income went down. My expenses just went really high. At the same time, I'm still co-hosting the TV show with my dad, and the girl who did my makeup for TV, she said, Terry, there's something on your face right here, and it's been there for a while. She said, what is that? I said, I don't know. I don't know what that is. It's just this little spot. She said, I think you need to go to get it checked out. Come to find out, I was diagnosed with skin cancer. So I had skin cancer on my back, my face, and my entire chest. So they did surgery on my face. I had stitches all the way down my face and my back. And then they said, you have so much skin cancer on your chest, we can't do surgery. You're going to have to take chemo cream for this. So my chest turned to raw hamburger meat in July and August. It was right after I left you that I had the procedure. And I mean, here it is, 110 degrees in Dallas, and I'm having to wear things that cover my chest because if you saw it, you would want to throw up. And I'm doing the TV show covering this. I'm hiding my face with my hair. Driving an hour and a half, living in a hotel, got the lawsuit, got the IRS, and I'm going for my dreams. And I'm teaching everybody else, dream big. But do you know, I had to do exactly what I'm telling you today. I made a decision. I am going to do what God put me on this earth to do. I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to go ask for my old job back. I'm not going to give Satan the thrill of seeing me cower down. I had a routine every single day. You better believe I was listening to the word of God, driving to work, driving to home, while I'm in the gym. I kept investing in myself. I was still going to the bookstore, getting books, going online, ordering people's resources. V, keeping that vision before my eyes. Why? Because whatever you keep before your eyes, it will eventually show up in your life. And then E, give it everything you got. Some of our LTD friends who are here, you remember me sharing some of this, and I was still walking in the testimony when I shared that. But listen to this. I wish so bad that back then somebody would have given me a copy of this CD today so I would know how it ends. Because wouldn't it just help you hang on a little tougher if you were like, oh, well, I already know how it's going to end. It's all going to turn around. But I didn't have that testimony, and some of you don't have the testimony yet. But I hope this encourages you to hang on. So, you know, through the end of all that, the IRS contacted us months later, and they said, we made a mistake by $10,000. So we still have $17,500, but I said, I'll take it. Then the company that was suing my husband, they said, we'll settle for $10,000. So we gave them $10,000. We were thankful because we didn't know what it was going to be. Then, get this. Here we are living in the hotel, no offers on the house. In one day, we get this phone call from the realtor, and she says, you just got an offer on the house. I was like, we did after 7 months? She said, that's not the best part. You just got two offers. They got in a bidding war. The house went up $30,000 in one day. Is that amazing? And that's not it. This is so cool. All of a sudden, Rodney and I go to the mailbox one day, there's a check in the mailbox from a gas company. You know, there's a lot of gas out there in Texas. They found gas on one of our properties years ago and forgot to pay us. $53,000 in one check. And I think the best part is I'm standing here today completely healed of skin cancer. Thank you, Jesus. But you know, I want that to be an encouragement to you that, like my dad said, when you feel like giving up the most, that's always an indication your breakthrough is just about to happen. Satan always attacks those next in line for a promotion. When I think back over my life, every time I've had massive breakthroughs, there's always been, man, these challenges right before. Satan always attacks those next in line for a promotion. So I want to challenge you today, and this is one of the things I love, is that I'm believing that God's accelerating things. The things that should take 5 years, God can do it in 1 year. I mean, you look at this church. 2 years ago, they were just pointing to this building. Here we are today in the building, and it's packed to capacity. Think about that. God's accelerating things, and I believe he's going to do that in your life. In fact, there's a scripture in Amos 9:13 that says things are going to happen so fast, your head will swim. Y'all believe that? Yes. Did you receive this today?
Yes.
Do you feel like God's speaking to you?
Yes.
About your future, about your dreams?
Yes.
Then it was worth the trip to Colorado.